You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, a place where individuality, passion, and dedication are right at home. Here for those of you who are seeking inspiration and chasing their dreams and insights into the day-to-day life of a modern woman in pharmacy. Your host is an entrepreneurial pharmacist, a pharmacy advocate, and founder of the Lux Pharmacist. Welcome to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hi there, Happy New Year, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. Today's episode is the third episode of my residency series, and we are talking about everyone's favorite topic, interviews. Obviously, I'm only joking. I'm sure there are some of us who do not mind interviews, but for the majority of us, I'm sure that they are anxiety-provoking and just not the most fun thing that you could be doing. So with that being said, my goal for this episode is to really give you guys all the advice and preparation tips that I can so that you walk out of those interviews knowing that you nailed it and feeling confident. First, just to give you guys an idea of the timeline. So if you're listening to this episode, then you either are probably about to submit your forecast applications or you have already submitted them. So sometime either early January, mid-January, it all depends per institution, but sometime in January, you will get an email and it will either say one of three things. So it will either offer you an interview, it will waitlist you, which if you guys haven't heard of, I hadn't heard of, and then possibly they could also decline you for an interview. I don't believe that waitlisting is very common at all. I think it's pretty rare, but I did just want to mention it in case anyone does get that email and is totally as confused as I was when it happened to my friend last year. So essentially what I believe it means is that they have offered other candidates an interview spot. However, if any of them decline the interview, or possibly if they interview some of them and then don't like those candidates, then you may get offered an interview afterwards. But again, I don't think that's very common and it wouldn't be something that I banked on as like, you will get an interview. And then the other negative thing that could happen would be getting declined from an institution, which is very common. There are tons and tons of applications, and it's not, you know, unheard of for people to get declined for an interview. It happened to me last year. So if that happens to you, no hard feelings. You will find the institution that is right for you or the job that is right for you. It's just all a part of the process. And then for those emails that are offering you an interview slot, generally what I found last year was that they would give you a few different dates that you could then rank, and they would tell you, you know, we will choose one based on your preferences and who answers first. So I would try and answer those emails as soon as you can. And then they will generally follow up with another email telling you which day and time have been selected for you. And then also in those emails, they generally tell you if there's a presentation or a patient case or, you know, something that you need to prepare for ahead of time. And then the interview days themselves are normally either a full day interview or a half day interview, just depending on the institution. And it will say that in the email normally when you get that, it'll have all the details. But you generally, let's say, have your question sessions in the morning, and then you could possibly be doing a presentation. And if there are other applicants there that day, you do present to all the applicants normally. And then let's say you go to lunch with the residents, and then you have like a tour in the afternoon or something. So those would be the different components. It could be flip-flop some different way, scheduling, but those are the different things that you would most likely be doing on a full-day interview. And you could be doing all those same things on a half-day interview. They just may all be shortened a little bit, or maybe, you know, you're not all doing presentations. Maybe you're just doing a patient case all at one time, so that saves some time. So it really will just depend on the institution that you are interviewing at. So that is like a kind of general overview of the format of an interview that you can expect and kind of the timing of when you can expect emails. What I really want to spend time talking about are, you know, what to wear and what to bring, the different types of presentations or patient cases, kind of like the knowledge check things you could expect, and then obviously and probably most importantly, what type of interview questions you can expect. And then I will double check and look at all the questions that you guys submitted to me, and if there's any that are kind of straggling behind, then I will just do a Q&A at the end and answer those. So first, what to wear. I would say that interviews are very business. They are not business casual. I will say, just from being at the showcase, if any of you were there, it is kind of similar to what a lot of people were wearing. They either wore a suit or a skirt suit or some type of suit. So I would definitely wear a jacket. I think a suit, that's like my favorite thing to recommend, is just wearing a suit, whether you are a male or a female. I think they just look so professional and crisp. If you do want to wear a professional dress or a skirt, the only thing that kind of comes into question is the whole like tights versus no tights fiasco. And I would say always go tights, unless you have been a student there or a intern there and you absolutely know that they don't require tights. But I feel like tights are just always a safe way to go. It's just automatically more professional and more reserved. So that would be my advice. The other thing is, like, don't feel like you need to have a million outfits, because you're interviewing at a different place every single time. And I can tell you 100% for a fact, I wear the exact same outfit to every single interview. I try to go shopping before and I don't even think I found anything good. And it's like, why waste your money? You're literally going to a different place every single time. No shame in wearing the same outfit every time. And then the only other outfit thing I will say is that, again, thinking of the tour. So wear shoes that are comfortable. Not to say that you can't wear heels, but I wore my heels that are a block heel and very comfy to walk in, and I knew I wasn't going to die. So just think that you may be walking all over the hospital, so you should definitely wear something that is comfortable for you, whatever that means. And then I always recommend bringing a padfolio or portfolio. I don't even know if those are the same thing, but I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. It's essentially like the little booklet, you know, they're leather, you have the pad inside, you can write, you have the little sleeve where you can put your CVs, there's normally like a little pen holder, so I would definitely bring one of those. And then I always had maybe like 3 to 5 copies of my CV. I would print out the list of questions that I wanted to ask, you know, the preceptors or the residents that day, and then obviously have the pen with you so that you can write down things as well. Actually, also, while I record this, please bring a water bottle. I swear to God, please bring a water bottle. I think it might have been my first interview or my second interview, but there was an interview where I didn't bring a water bottle and I was absolutely dying. And it was a place that I had to do a presentation at, and I swear they didn't have waters. You think that they would, but they didn't. Please, please, please bring your own water bottle, because whether you're presenting or not, you will be talking all day and you definitely need it. And then moving on to the different types of activities that you may be doing besides the question sessions, and I actually feel like I got a very diverse experience in this last year while interviewing, so it's nice to be able to personally talk about a lot of them for you. So the three major activities that I have heard of and been exposed to are portfolios, patient cases, and presentations. I think the least common one would be the portfolio, and this can include posters, presentations, projects, MUEs, monographs, really anything that you've worked on as a student. But generally, they will tell you in the interview or the email that you get what they want to see and which types of projects or things that you've worked on would count. But my biggest tips would be to be super clean and organized. So have things printed very nicely, you know, have them organized nicely in a small binder, or I even think some people use just like padfolios, but however you're showcasing your work, do it in a very clean and neat way. You don't want to just like shove papers into a folder without putting any effort in, because that would probably give off like the absolute opposite impression of what we're trying to give off. And then the other thing is I had one portfolio last year, and I feel like I made the mistake of kind of thinking some of the things I worked on were other people's projects, and you know, I couldn't really take credit for that. So I would say that anything that you have worked on as a student, even if it was someone else's project and you just kind of helped, like that is still something that you worked on. So when I was actually in the portfolio session, one of the preceptors I had worked with was like, oh, you know, you could have included this MUE you did on AltaPlace for the codes. And I was kind of embarrassed that I didn't even think about that because, you know, I kind of thought like, oh, well, it was, you know, the residence project and I didn't even have access to it. And I told her, you know, oh, I didn't have the details or like I didn't have the papers with me to print out. And she was like, oh, you should have just emailed me. So biggest tip for the portfolio is if you've worked on something that was really cool, even if you don't personally have the documents, just reach out and ask for them. And I'm sure someone would be happy to send them to you. So that's my tip for the portfolios. For presentations, based on my interview experience, this was the most common for me, and it was actually the one that I was dreading the most, because at the time I despised public speaking. And if you've been following me for a while on Instagram, then you probably already know that this is one of the main things that I've been working hard to overcome. So for anyone who is in the same position as me, it does get better. It will be okay, I promise. Presentations for an interview are normally either some kind of a patient case or a clinical pearl. One institution near me, though, does make candidates do like a presentation on themselves, which I think is kind of fun. But in general, they are patient cases or like a clinical pearl. Again, but when they email you, they should be telling you what type of presentation they would expect, the time length that is required, and any other details that you would need to know. I actually used the same MRSA bacteremia patient case for all of my presentation interviews, but I had to tweak it for each institution because they all had kind of different time requirements. And I will say, making a presentation longer is like no problem. Making it shorter and still being detailed and including everything you need to include is almost impossible. So even if you have a really strong presentation, don't go into interview season thinking that you don't need to make any changes because you probably do. Each institution is going to require slightly different things. And then other biggest thing when it comes to presentations is you need to know your presentation inside and out. So this is your time to shine. I mean, you are bringing them this topic. You chose the topic, so you should really know everything about it. And 100% be prepared for follow-up questions. So again, this is your topic. You should know it inside and out. And based on the topic and the things that you include, you should kind of be able to anticipate some of the questions that are going to come your way, and you should have answers for those. And then for patient cases, these are probably going to be pretty similar to things that you have had in school or on rotation. So I know at my school, we actually had a year-long course called seminar, and we literally all we did was patient cases. So it was very similar to that style that I had been exposed to. The patients could either be, say, admitted in the patient case, or they could be at some kind of an outpatient follow-up. So think about the type of institution that you're interviewing at. Is it primarily an inpatient residency, or does this residency have a lot of AM care? So you can kind of possibly predict the type of patient case that you're going to get based on, you know, what's really common at that hospital. But then again, you could get something random, so you never really know, but that's a good way to kind of predict. So you'll probably be asked to make changes to either the patient's, you know, medication regimen, maybe they're on an outpatient follow-up, like I said, or, you know, based on their active current disease states in the hospital, you know, what pharmacotherapy recommendations do you have? So it's something similar to that. For me, mine was a written case with no resources. So what they really emphasized to us was that you don't need to know everything, but we want to see, like your thought process on how you're thinking through things. So they told us to write down absolutely everything. You know, if we were recommending a drug, but we didn't know a dose, you know, we would write down, oh, I would look up the dose here, etc. Oh, is this lab normal? I would look that up. So kind of literally putting anything down that you were thinking through because they wanted to see that thought process. So obviously patient cases are meant to test your baseline knowledge, but what I think they really want to see is that you can critically think and that you can work through a patient case. So highlighting that thought process, whether it is a written case or a case that you have to present, because I have heard of that too. So mine, again, was a written case where I had no resources. But I have heard of patient case presentations where you do have a computer and resources for, you know, whatever amount of time, maybe a half hour, maybe who knows. But then you have to present it afterwards. So, I mean, that definitely sounds more nerve-wracking, I'm not going to lie, but I have heard of it. So I just don't want anyone to be shocked if that happens to them. But again, you did have resources in that case. So those things that you could, you know, look up, or you would need to look up with the written one, you would have that ability. You would just then have to present it. But I would say pay attention to the specific wording in your email that is granting you an interview, because if I remember correctly, my email did say specifically a written patient case. So depending on what it says, you may be able to predict what type of patient case you'll have. And another activity that may be included to test your knowledge would be incorporating clinical questions into the interview. So these may be incorporated into the general interview question sessions themselves. I remember last year being so scared of the clinical questions, you know, and if I would know the answer or not. And I will say, if you're actively on clinical-based rotations, it's a lot easier. In phase one, I wasn't, and I hadn't had a clinical rotation for three rotations. I had like institutional, and then I had a teaching one, and then I had community. So I felt like my clinical practice brain was like really out of it. So I felt like I kind of needed to study. And if you are going to try and study anything, I would say, again, kind of similar to trying to predict the type of patient case, I would look at the type of institution you're interviewing at. You know, is it largely inpatient versus outpatient? That can kind of help you focus on certain disease states. But if you are actively on a clinical based rotation, then I think it's a lot easier, because on my phase two interviews, I was in the CTICU, and some of the questions I was getting were just like a piece of cake, amen, thank you, because my preceptors were drilling those same things into me. So it's not like you're going to get these crazy, outrageous, hard questions. They're going to be pretty basic. It's just, you know, going to be, do you know that disease state well enough at the time you're asked to answer the question? And again, yes, the whole point of these questions is to some degree to test your baseline knowledge. But like I said before, they also really want to see that you can work through something and critically think about a patient case. So some of my questions were more geared towards that. So for example, I was asked, you know, if I got a request for blank medication as a non-formulary request, what would I say? What else would I need to know to answer the question? Where would I look for information? Another question I got, I believe I was asked about an anticoagulant, I forget which one, but, you know, they were asking, what else would you need to know in order to agree that this dose, whatever the dose was appropriate? So you have to think about renal function, indication, all those other things. So some of them are meant to be more just looking at how you're thinking through things versus like, can you list whatever? But some of them are going to be more straightforward. So I think I also got questions like, you know, can you name all the antibiotics that cover blank? So you can really get a mix of them, but don't be too stressed out about the clinical questions. At the end of the day, I mean, no one expects a student to know everything. No one expects a resident to know everything. So they're really just trying to get a baseline for you. You know, no one's going to think you're stupid because you can't answer one question. So study if you want to study, but I wouldn't overstress about it. Okay, now on to the good stuff, on to the meat of it, the actual interview questions. And I will say most of the questions are behavioral based, and I'll explain what that means. So questions like, why do you want to do a residency, or why do you want to complete a residency at our program specifically, are very straightforward, kind of traditional questions, where behavioral questions tend to involve some type of situation and how you respond to it. So they normally start with, tell me about a time that, or describe a time when you, or give me an example of when. And then typically they end with, how did you handle it? What did you learn from it, etc. And even if they don't include that as an ending, so for example, they just say, tell me about a time when you had conflict working with others. They don't actually care about the situation itself. They care about how you responded to it and what you learned from it and what you'll do next time. And that actually brings up one of my biggest tips, and that is to never let a negative question stay negative. So this means if they're asking about conflict or a time you failed, whatever they may be asking about, Yes, you have to describe the situation, but don't spend time on that. Spend time talking about how you responded to it in a positive light, what you learned from this experience, what you're going to do next time differently. You know, it's not like a time to complain. So no one wants to hear, oh yeah, you know, my group project failed because my partner sucked, and next time I just hope that I get better group partners. It's like, okay, thank you very much, but next. And another tip for the behavioral questions, or an easy way to work through them, would be to use the STAR method. So STAR stands for situation, task, action, result. So again, describe the situation or task briefly, but really spend time talking about the action you took and the result of that, what you learned, etc. So that you don't need to like religiously follow this acronym, but if that's helpful for you to kind of think of structuring a response, then go ahead and feel free to use STAR. Behavioral questions tend to focus on a different skill, such as teamwork or leadership, patient care, compassion, etc. I know I personally got asked a lot of behavioral questions, which I believe is the case everywhere. I believe that is the normal format. But I did get some, you know, traditional straightforward questions as well. So I do believe it's going to be a mix of the two, most likely. And behavioral questions honestly really scared me at first because there are just so many different questions. But again, they're all kind of targeting a specific skill or character, like leadership or time management. So what I found actually is that one experience that you have, say working in a group, for example, that could be used to speak about leadership, time management, dealing with conflict, teamwork, etc. So depending on what part of your experience you're highlighting, you can actually use it to talk about many different questions. So what I actually did for behavioral questions to prepare was I made a ton of flashcards because, again, flashcards are my jam. It's my go-to. It's how I memorize best. So I made one for every, like, category or character I could think of. So teamwork, conflict, leadership, time management. And then on the back of all those cards, I would write down all the different experiences I thought I could use to talk about that one subject. That way, while I was in the interview, you know, I didn't need to keep using the same situation like three times. So depending on the different questions you'll ask or get asked in the interview, you know, there was multiple different experiences in my head that I was ready to say, I already talked about this one, so let me use this example instead. So again, one experience could possibly be used to answer like six different behavioral questions. It just depends on how you're highlighting it. So rather than, you know, making flashcards for 200 different possible behavioral questions you could get asked, what I really suggest you guys do is reflect on your year as an APPE student, your year or your all your years in pharmacy school. Think about all the experiences you've had and, you know, highlight the most important or the most critical experiences that you've had and what you've gained the most out of them. And then from, say, those 10 experiences, think of all the different questions or things that you could highlight, you know, to showcase different skills that they may ask you about. Another question-specific thing I want to talk about is two-part questions, and these are like my worst nightmare, and I didn't even realize it last year. I had a major fail during interviews with one of these, so here's my advice. Always answer part one first, like in its entirety, as if it was its own question, because you can always ask them to please repeat part two. That's very common. That's not bad at all. But answer part one, again, as if it was its own question. I made the mistake of answering part one and two kind of like all at the same time, and it was way too quick and short, and then clearly it was just not what they wanted based on their facial expressions. And then we had this like awkward gap of time at the end. It was just bad, guys. So don't do that. Answer each part separately. Again, just answer the first one and then ask them, you know, to repeat the second part of the question. And while they're telling you it, you know, then you can even be thinking of your, like, a response in your head. But yeah, take those seriously because I really messed up on one, I'm going to be honest. But you know, that's what this podcast is for. I'm supposed to tell you guys all my failures, and then you're supposed to not repeat them. It's supposed to be like a learning process. And speaking of learning, the other thing I'm going to do for you guys is when this podcast goes live and I post it to my blog, beneath the like actual part where you would view it on the blog page itself, I'm going to include different like resource links. So question banks or different websites that I think will be helpful for you guys. But also if you were to just Google like behavioral questions or anything like that, I'm sure you would get a lot of hits. But I will put some links there for you guys. And then the other thing I want to do is I want to do a Q&A with all the kind of like specific questions that I haven't touched upon yet. So let's get into that. So the first question is thank you notes, handwritten or email. I personally like emails, and I think thank you emails are great if done properly. So don't just send them without thought. Really take your time. Make sure they're professional and well written. I always like to email the RPD and current residents that you saw that day. And then preceptor wise, I think it kind of depends. So if you were interviewed by like 13 different preceptors, I mean, that's way too many to email. I don't even know how you'd make all those emails, you know, slightly unique. So you don't want to like send the exact copy email to like 13 different people. That doesn't send a good message. So I would say definitely RPDs and current residents. Those are great people to always email. In my phase two interview, I had less people there. So I believe there was three preceptors and then my RPD, because it was just a much more like rush process. So there was less people available. And in that case, when you only have like four different people plus the two residents to email, I would say email everyone. So always RPD and then the current residents. But preceptor wise, I think it would kind of depend on how many you were interviewed by. Also, you don't need to email every single program. So I would only spend the time writing thank you emails to like my absolute top programs. Second question is, was I asked in-depth questions about my CV? So typically, no. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I see you've worked at CVS. Tell me about your years there. But, you know, I was talking about my work experience and customer service and different things while, you know, I was answering like the behavioral type questions and things like that. But I will say if you do have very unique things on your CV, like I think I actually had the Pharmacy Future Leaders podcast episode on there. So in some of my interview sessions, I kind of got asked about that. So if you have very, very unique things on there, aka things that other pharmacy students may not have, then you may get specific CV questions. But in general, I was talking about the things on my CV. It was just, I was using it to answer a question that they asked. They didn't directly ask from my CV. Okay, next question. Ooh, the tell us about yourself question. So when I answer this, I like to include where I'm from, where I went to pharmacy school, perhaps why I went into pharmacy, if it's kind of like a short and concrete reason. And then I also talk about the things that I did or was involved in school that led me to want to do a residency, because that is essentially why you're there that day to interview, is because you want to do a residency. So I kind of leave it, like I say a bunch of different things, but I kind of leave them more brief. And then if they have specific questions on that, it can kind of become a conversation where they ask you a follow-up question. You don't have to give them this like long-winded 5-minute speech about your life. And then I'm kind of combining this next question because it was asked several different times, but it essentially all is the same thing. So this is the hardest or most random or most difficult questions that I was asked. So two of them, I've been trying to think about this, and two of them really stood out to me. So I was asked, describe a time you wish you acted differently. That one really threw me for a loop. And the other one that really was just like, what? was describe a time your character was questioned and how you handled it. So that one took me a little bit too, which brings me to the next question that was asked. So answering questions you're not prepared for. It is never wrong to say, you know, that is a great question. Can I please think about it for a second? So take time. Gather your thoughts, you know, don't sit there going, super nervous. Just ask for a second, take a breath, gather your thoughts, and then answer the question to your best of your ability. Okay, next question is things that you should be asking the program, or like questions to ask the program. So I always believe that you should ask the program, you know, anything else that you want more information on. So whether that's about choosing a project, whether that's about opportunities to precept students or to potentially teach, more information about a specific rotation that you're interested in, I think is always a great one, especially if it happens to be that preceptor who is there interviewing you. I also always like asking about the culture of the pharmacy department. In general, it's good to ask questions that aren't, you know, that you can't answer online. So don't ask someone how often they staff if it's online. Asking about staffing is kind of, I'm not sure, because it kind of gives the impression of like, ugh, how often do I have to staff? So I actually tend to just avoid that question altogether. I'd rather just be told about it, you know, after I match to a residency. If it's on the internet, great. If it's not, oh well. So that's just personally how I feel about that question. And then you can also ask kind of like bigger picture things too. So you can ask, you know, are there any changes to the residency program that you're anticipating from this year to next year? But I will say be strategic in what questions you're asking to who. So if you're asking a question like that last one about changes to the residency program, well, that question is probably best for the residency program director. And then questions about, you know, what it's like to be on blank rotation, that's probably best for the preceptors. And then there's other questions that are best for the residents. So kind of tailor what questions you're asking to who. And then the last question, I think this is a good one to end on, is how to overcome nervousness. So I think the best thing that you can do to get rid of the nerves and the stress and anxiety of this entire process is just to know that everything happens for a reason. So you guys should take the time to reflect upon and celebrate everything that you have accomplished. I mean, you're about to graduate pharmacy school. That is a huge accomplishment. You've probably poured so much dedication and hard work into not just school itself, but, you know, this whole residency application process. So really take time to celebrate yourselves and everything that you've accomplished, and just trust that you will end up in the right place and where you're meant to be, you know, whether that is where you expect it to be or not. I would just know that you've done everything that you can do and you're doing your best work, and that, you know, you're really going to end up where you need to be. So I think when you think about it that way, it just kind of takes a lot of the pressure and the uncertainty away, because if you just trust that you'll end up exactly where you're meant to be, then that uncertainty kind of goes away. And on that note, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Don't forget to follow my residency journey on Instagram at theluxpharmacist and my blog, theluxpharmacist.com. I wish you all nothing but the absolute best in 2020.
That's all for this episode of the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. Be sure to share this podcast on your social media networks, and let's reach more innovative pharmacists with a flair for style, a creative approach to life, and a passion for patient care. Learn more. Check out theluxpharmacist.com.